If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 293. Today, the Amateur Traveler travels to a place that many people would sooner avoid as we go to northern Iraq. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. One is, if you're planning on seeing the Statue of Liberty, you might want to do so before this fall, because it will close for a one-year revamp. And two is, that might give people from Europe one less reason to travel to the United States, but people from the United States may have one less reason to travel to Europe. According to Salon magazine, the actions of the EU may trigger a global trade war because they plan to charge all airlines flying into the EU for carbon emissions. And that's bad news for anyone who wants to fly into Amsterdam to take advantage of a new program that they have there. They're now going to be allowing prostitution at the airport. And I don't know what else to say. There's a punchline that practically writes itself. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'm very pleased to welcome to the show Anil Polat, who is a travel blogger under the name Fox Nomad, who is on a goal right now and has been for 2 years to travel to every country in the world. And we brought him on the show to talk about a particularly unusual travel destination. Anil, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And I say an unusual destination. We're actually talking about travel to someplace that I'm not sure I would go. Where did you go recently?
I recently went to Iraq and traveled for a few days, mostly in northern Iraq, actually. And I went with one other blogger, and we went to a place we knew nothing about but had heard a lot about on the news.
Now, I'm a little curious. First of all, you're in the Kurdish region of Iraq.
Yes.
And you yourself are of Turkish ethnicity.
Yes, yes.
And the Turks and the Kurds haven't always gotten along all so well.
Yes, true.
But it sounded to me like you had a wonderful trip there, despite the fact that some of us wouldn't go and wouldn't even recommend going.
You know, honestly, that was one of my concerns before going. I did not know how people would respond to me, if people would not like me being there. The whole idea of a Kurdistan in northern Iraq is a very controversial topic in Turkey, to say the least.
Sure.
And so I didn't know, when I flew from Turkey to northern Iraq and when I flew back, what the response would be and what it would be like, how people would treat me. And then also I had some, you know, security and safety concerns in general, just because of the location. However, people were very, very, very friendly to me, and it was a much more normal experience than I was expecting.
And when we say the issues between Kurdistan as being an issue there, I'm not sure that everybody is aware of this, but obviously the borders in that area weren't drawn based on ethnic makeup. And so if you literally drew an area, a border around where the Kurds live, it would include much, a third to half of eastern Turkey. And that's
right.
Where some of that concern is, that basically if the northern area of Iraq were to go independent, then Turkey might have a problem where it might have a problem with where its borders would be. And that could be a problem.
Exactly.
Going as far over, I want to say as far west as, not quite to Gaziantep, but what's the next city over in Turkey?
Well, I would say the main town would be Diyarbakir in that area of concern, Gaziantep. It's sort of a loose area that has no real definition. But I would say, yeah, those are probably the main two large cities.
Okay. And we had an exchange student from Gaziantep, and they would consider themselves Turkish, and there were, I think, many more Turks than Kurds in that area, but basically an hour drive to the east, and very quickly you're in the Kurdish region of Turkey. So anyway, Iraq. First of all, let's start with the obvious question, are you crazy?
Slightly, maybe, perhaps. Okay.
And then obviously not completely so, because you didn't go into Baghdad or the Green Zone or whatever. You stayed in an area that is more settled in terms of the government and those sort of things.
Right. We figured that it was the easiest place to start. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that it's not very easy to get a visa to Iraq, the country as a whole.
I could imagine that.
It sort of raises many suspicions if you're just going to travel.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you have a name like my name, it raises quite a bit of concern. But also, northern Iraq, the Kurdistan region, is almost an independent country in itself. They issue their own travel visas. So upon arrival at one of the airports, you're given a stamp. You can stay for 10 days, but it is not a valid stamp to enter the rest of Iraq.
Oh, interesting.
So you're confined to basically the major cities of Erbil, Duhok, Süleymaniye, and right outside of Kirkuk. Although I did leave the border for a while. I did actually leave the defined border.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few passport checks, but as long as I wasn't going further south, it wasn't an issue. But it is a separate sort of visa.
And you didn't try and stroll over the Iran border there?
No.
I understand that to be a very bad idea. Okay.
Yeah.
So would you recommend this trip? Let's start with that.
You know, honestly, the reason I went was because it was Iraq. It was a different place. It was something I knew little about. I was very interested in the Kurdish region, particularly. As far as the things I saw, it was incredibly interesting. Now, if it were a stable place, for example, and didn't have the history it had, recent history,
right,
I'm not sure I would put it at the top of my travel list.
Okay.
It is very high on my travel list right now. It's one of just the most interesting experiences I had over that period of time. But you go because it's Iraq. I don't think you go solely to sightsee, in my opinion.
And speaking of sightseeing, then what did you see?
Well, the first main thing is in Erbil, there is a citadel. It claims to be the oldest, up until 2003, was the oldest continually inhabited town or city. In 2003, I believe the government moved people out in order to renovate it, this citadel. And they haven't gotten around to it, so it's actually not inhabited anymore, which is pretty interesting. You can walk around, and it's a ghost town. It's a huge ghost town, which is pretty cool. There are some waterfalls to the north of northern Iraq.
And that is a mountainous region, as I recall.
Yes, it's really much more mountainous, especially in Erbil, than many people may have assumed. They may assume it's desert, but that's not really the case around Erbil. It's pretty hilly and mountainous. So those are some of the main things there. There's also a monument in Halabja, which is the town where Saddam Hussein gassed and killed many Kurdish people during the Iran-Iraq war. And there's a monument there, which I think is worth seeing. And Süleymaniye is one of the just craziest places I've ever seen. It could be China. It's a city that's very cosmopolitan in a sense, but it's almost everything is almost a Chinese restaurant. There's Chinese writing everywhere. The name of the mall is Kaso Mall. I think everybody inside who has a store who's shopping is Chinese. It's very heavily Chinese influenced, and it's worth it to go there just to see that.
And I assume that when you say it's very heavily Chinese, that's got to be an old presence there in terms of this being an old trade route?
I think so. And a few of the people I spoke to there seem to see it as an opportunity as well. This part of Iraq is developing very quickly. It's relatively stable. And there's a very strong economic investment in the area, mainly from Turkey, but especially from China as well now.
Okay.
I think it's an opportunity they see. And I think that's a pretty good bet that in 10 or 20 years, that's going to be a pretty booming town in that area.
Interesting.
And I'm thinking of, in terms of just actual sites, there is a German restaurant, and it's called the Deutscher Hof Erbil, I believe. It has kind of an interesting story. It's on the old UN base that we read about before going. It was originally a restaurant opened by a former German soldier in Kabul. And in Kabul, well, obviously the situation got worse, and in northern Iraq it got better. So the owner of this restaurant moved it to Erbil. And there's a beer garden on this old UN base where you can go and have authentic German food, have beer. They celebrate all of the German holidays as well as Christmas. It was December when I was there, and I walked inside, and it's really like a rundown sort of place, like the area. It's an old base. It's been abandoned. And you go inside, and there's Christmas music and a Christmas tree and beer and German people, a few of them. It's just one of the strangest places I've ever seen. It's just so unexpected. And I think it's certainly worth a visit. It's very unique. And it's just one of those things that it's sort of like Iraq reminds me quite a bit of the Old West in the U.S.
Hmm.
You know, it's sort of people are setting up shop and anything goes and nobody bothers anybody. Everybody's sort of in their own world. And it's a really, those are sort of the highlights I'd say that are worth definitely seeing.
What surprised you?
What surprised me were two things. One, that almost everybody ignored me. Which I thought was very strange. Usually when you travel places, especially places less developed, you get a lot of attention as a traveler.
Mm-hmm.
I thought speaking or being Turkish would draw me a lot of negative attention. Turns out most people in the north speak some amount of Turkish. It was very easy to get around with Turkish. I was also very surprised to hear people say, "I love George Bush," and show me two big thumbs up signs and the biggest smile ever. That was like the common phrase of Iraq. "We love George Bush. We love George Bush." And then followed by like a downward hit. We know, but we love George Bush. All of that surprised me. So because the North has done pretty well after the last Iraq war, and the Kurds have a very strong positive feeling towards George Bush, although they acknowledge that they realize many people around the world don't feel the same way. And then finally, I would say that there were no like typical scams. Nobody tried to mislead me or charge me differently. I thought that was very unusual, just because usually in places that are less developed that have, you know, sort of big places with tourists, you right. get in a taxi and you get a different price. But no, every price was the same. Every money exchange place quoted me the exact same rate, every single one.
Hmm.
It was the same rate that was the only official place to exchange money, which is the airport and the bank. So I was shocked by that. I wasn't expecting it.
I normally ask what the guidebooks recommend, you know, and how you felt about what the recommendations were. Did you even have a guidebook?
No.
Okay.
There was one major recommendation which made me think, and that was I looked on some forums. So for the drive between Erbil and, I want to say, Halabja, I'm pretty sure that's the route, you can either take a four-hour ride through the mountains. What that does is it's four times as long and four times as more expensive with the shared taxi. But you stay within the border of the Kurdistan regional government.
Ah, okay.
So it's safer. The other one leaves the border and goes right outside of Kirkuk, which is even more dangerous than Baghdad right now. There are many more incidents there. But you just drive along the highway, go on the outskirts of town, and then come back inside the border. And when I say border, it's not like a border like Canada-US. It's a heavily fortified, large concrete barrier, walls, snipers, everything kind of border. So that was the one thing. It was sort of 50-50 online. There were just a few people who had done it and said, "No, don't leave. It's extremely dangerous. You will be kidnapped and you're dead." And then the others like, "I think it's an acceptable risk." So, you know, I decided that it was an acceptable risk, and it gave me one of the most memorable travel experiences I've ever had. So as you leave the region, there are these checkpoints, many of them. And I'm talking, in 1 hour, you'll go through probably 10 checkpoints where, you know, if you're foreign, the car, the shared taxi is pulled over. They search the car and they search you, check passports and everything. I had my U.S. passport. And at one of these checkpoints, we're called over by the Kurdish military away from the car and led away. And the car is gone. My bags are there. I'm thinking, this is not good. I'm going to come back and the guy's going to be gone. I'm being taken behind this large barrier. And I get behind there. And I turn this corner and there's a U.S. soldier there. And he turns around and he looks at me and my friend who was there. And he says, holy shit, man. What the hell are you doing here? And it was this young soldier from Houston. He had been there for 3 months. And he said, what are you doing? I said, we're traveling. He was shocked. Like, do you have family here? Or are you a journalist? Or why are you here? No, just traveling. Just want to see it. And he was really in shock. And he told us he had been deployed 3 months before. And basically he's from Houston. And he was doing it to pay his way through school. And he let us on our ways. He said, this is crazy. And I was like, that's when I really felt like, okay, I'm in Iraq, right? You know, this is no joke.
Right.
So, yes, so a little story. But the guidebooks were, I don't know. I don't know how safe. I mean, that particular checkpoint was a few weeks after was a car bomb was run into it. And nobody was killed, thankfully. So, but I don't know how, if it's just luck or how dangerous it really is.
Hmm. And you mentioned that there were in the Kurdish region, in the northern region, a number of tourists, Chinese tourists you mentioned. Is the infrastructure in place? I mean, were there places to stay every place that you went? You know, you're staying in five-star hotels or hostels, or what really was the situation?
In general, northern Iraq does not have a tourism infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
You have, it just doesn't exist. They're slowly starting, but in each of the major cities, you have one or two five-star hotels, which are outside of the town.
Mm-hmm.
I believe one is a Hilton or, you know, pretty well-known Western hotels.
And I'm picturing that they're more like a compound for security?
The one in Erbil is pretty far outside of town.
Okay.
Like, it's sort of in the middle of nowhere, and it's by the airport. And the security to get in is, you know, to get a car in, you're being checked way before you get close.
Mm-hmm.
Inside town, there are lots of little hotels, like very small, rundown hotels. You can't find any of them online. So you can't book anything online.
So these are more where the locals would stay if they were traveling? And
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. These are, I would imagine, this is sort of like a worker hotel, like a guy who's going somewhere to work
mm-hmm.
is living out of a place like this. And they're pretty run down. I mean, not because the owners are not taking care of the place, but because they can't. They don't have enough revenue to keep the place up. So, mm-hmm. you know, those are your two options. $20, $30 a night for a budget hotel, $200 to $500 a night for something else. So, and if I were to guess, I would say it's probably much safer to stay in one of the small local hotels than to stay in the big, mm-hmm. only Western hotel. Yeah.
Right. Keeping a low profile. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you were getting around by renting a car and driver, it sounded like, or shared taxis.
Shared taxi. That's the main way to get between the cities in northern Iraq. A few of those shared taxis will also go to other parts of Iraq as well. But that's not recommended by anybody, for Westerners, for anybody, really.
And what was the best day?
I think the best day was, so I was there with this other blogger, Earl Barron, and we were sitting in Süleymaniye in a big hookah cafe. And this was the first time we had seen a place where people were gathering at night.
Okay.
One thing we noticed was after 7 p.m., the streets were very quiet. In Erbil, there's Christian district Ankawa, which was sort of alive after night. The other places were very quiet. So we come to Süleymaniye, which is much more active at night and different. And we walk in and we go to a pizza place, strangely enough. And we meet one of the Kurdish workers there. And he's cooking, making a sub. And he says, I live in Norway and I come back and forth 6 months here, 6 months in Norway. And so I said, why do you come back? See my family and for sexy, sexy time, he tells us, which is kind of strange. And he gave us like a big wink, like, You know what I'm talking about.
Like as if that was the reason you had come to Iraq?
Which was very strange. Like, I don't know what you're talking about, but okay. So that was pretty interesting. And then we went to a hookah cafe down the street and stayed, had great Wi-Fi, which is pretty hard to find in northern Iraq. And we're tweeting, blogging, smoking shisha, hanging out in a place that was so incredibly normal, where the people were incredibly friendly. People were talking to us, and it was just so unexpected, you know. Like, you hear Iraq, and you go, you think, this is a war-torn country, the people are hardened, and they're probably not going to like outsiders, they're not going to like Turks, they're not going to like Americans, they're not going to like... But it was completely the opposite, and I was just shocked, and it was a great moment to be shocked. That was the best moment, is sitting in that cafe with a laptop out, drinking tea, smoking shisha, and talking about things from basketball to, you know, all kinds of stuff with everyone around us. Sort of just weird.
Hmm. And you mentioned the soldier from Houston and this person coming in from Norway. Who was the local you met who made the biggest impression on you?
Well, I think the Norway guy was pretty interesting. He had some pretty different stories. There was one guy in one shared taxi, actually, who was Kurdish, but he had been living in, I believe, London. Well, he was in England for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming from somewhere outside of the Kurdistan region. He was coming somewhere further south, so down towards Baghdad. And once he realized that we could speak English, he told us this story where he was going there to work, and he was now coming back to visit family, and he goes there to work, and he sends money back. And he basically told us he has it pretty good, but his family back home has it really bad. It was very touching to see, here's a guy who's left, who's far from his family, who doesn't want to be, you know, and he's just doing it to really support all of his family back home. And it was just really touching that he felt so torn to be away, but he had to. And it's sort of the opposite immigrant story from a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, often places you feel like people are running and want to stay. But I feel like he told a story which many immigrants could probably tell, that, you know, he's going simply to work and to support his family. And if he could bring them, give them a better life, he would. But their situation is very locked. It was very touching when he got out of the taxi and he said, just like a good friend was leaving in such a short time.
Hmm. Interesting. We normally ask one warning you would give, and I really don't know if that's necessary for this show. Don't go to Iraq. Are there other warnings that you would give that you learned from being on the ground there?
Yes. Okay. I'll say this. Go with cash, because there are no ATMs in the Kurdistan government-controlled region, not at the airport and nowhere else. So if you go without cash, you're in trouble. Forget about it. So that would be one thing, one sort of warning. It's not a safety warning, but yeah. And as far as safety or getting around, most people were pretty oblivious. I get the feeling that people are very used to just minding their own business for whatever reason. I'm sure it's a place that was pretty suppressed for a long time. And I got the feeling that maybe this is a sort of mentality that comes out of that, I may be guessing. So I think it's fine. I just wouldn't leave the North. I don't recommend anybody try to do it, to get bold and say, hey, I can go to Baghdad. Everybody, from UN workers to US soldiers to locals, everybody said it's extremely dangerous, but the North is fine. That was the sort of word.
Okay. On the lighter side, what's one thing you saw that made you laugh and say, only in Iraq or only in Kurdistan?
Well, in Sulaymaniyah, you know, in Erbil, it's very hard to find anything but sandwiches. So I was looking for something else to eat. So we go to this Chinese restaurant, and outside of the door, there's a sign that basically has like a little icon, no guns, no automatic weapons, no swords, and no machetes. So I saw that. I was like, I got to go in there, you know, like that's pretty interesting. Go inside and get frisked. And that made me laugh. Like, this is no ordinary Chinese restaurant. You're getting frisked and being told, leave your machete at home. So that was just one of those moments. It was just surreal. And that restaurant was surreal as well. That entire hour was just incredibly strange. You know, we thought we would get Chinese food. We sit down. Mind you, the windows are tinted out. Originally, I was thinking, well, it's really hot, you know, in the summer. Well, We asked for food, and the waitress, the young Chinese waitress, looked at us like we had just, you know, said the sky was green or something. So she fishes around for a menu, finds something, and it's obviously the menu has not been opened in a very long time. But they have plenty of alcohol. It was just very weird, and nothing but men in this restaurant. And so there was a lot of sort of suspicious money exchange going on. Never got food, had a few drinks and left, and still don't know what that restaurant was all about.
If it in fact was a restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it was. We were told that it's not a brothel, but a lot of men go simply to flirt with the girls, and the girls get paid. That's as risque as it gets for many people there. So it's like, it's not prostitution, but they go to flirt. And there's sort of this pretty girl sits next to you, have a few drinks, and then the guys leave. And that's pretty much what we observed. I'm still not sure what was going on there, though.
Huh. Last few questions.
Sure.
Before you go to Northern Iraq, you should pack what?
I would say you should pack cash.
Right. You mentioned that. Mm-hmm.
If you're a woman, I would say bring a headscarf, something to cover up.
Hajib.
Yeah. Yeah, because it will be easier to get around. You just won't stand out as much. Many women were both covered and uncovered, so it's not a necessity, but it's probably a good recommendation to have.
And you say covered and uncovered, to what degree? Just the headscarf, or were you in a region where you were actually seeing women in the full burqa or a range of different?
It was a pretty wide range.
Okay.
I would compare it to Egypt. So okay. People left Egypt. It's very similar to what you'll see in Egypt. So you have a full range. And I would definitely bring a towel. It sounds silly, but...
No, I think Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy taught us that, isn't that right?
Towel and slippers, because the bathrooms are usually a La Turca toilet with a shower right next to it.
Okay.
But other than that, bring a camera and carry your passport with you. It's one of those places you should definitely have your passport on you, because you will be asked if you're traveling around. But other than that, nothing really outside of the ordinary of what you would travel with.
Okay. Before we get to the traditional last two questions, do you have anything else that you would tell people if they were going to follow in your footsteps?
I would say if you go, you will be shocked. And if you really want to go, it's not so dangerous that you can't. And it's worth visiting if you're curious about it. I wouldn't let the safety issue stop you, because I don't think it's that dangerous in the north.
Okay. And the views expressed are not necessarily those of the amateur traveler. And finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in northern Iraq when what?
When you go across a checkpoint and you are pulled out of your car, and every Iraqi soldier and every U.S. soldier and every Kurdish soldier is staring at you like you are an alien from Mars.
If you had to describe northern Iraq in three words, what three words would you use?
Wild, wild west. Those are the three words I would use. Okay. That sums it up.
And where can people read more about your travels?
You can go to foxnomad.com and you can read more about Iraq and all of the other countries I've been to, most of the other countries.
And how many have you been to so far? And when are you scheduled to complete your survey of all the countries of the world?
I have been to 44 right now. If I'm on course, it will take about 7.5 to 10 years to see the rest.
Okay. Well, and there's a new one. So, you know, as they start popping up here, that's going to make your job harder.
Funny enough, it is very high on my list to go.
Excellent. And the new one, just for those of you who don't listen to This Week in Travel, where we talked about it this week, is Southern Sudan.
Yes.
Well, Ando, thank you very much, sir, for coming on the show and telling us about your trip to Iraq.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
I'm not going to have any news of the community today because I need to pack, because I'm heading out to the Yucatan tomorrow. And I will say that this trip was inspired by the Travel to the Yucatan episode that we did with guidebook writer Zora O'Neill. So if you're interested, check out that episode. If you have any comments about this episode, feel free to leave them at amateurtraveler.com or drop me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening. Thank you.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.